Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome to the Scani Johnny podcast. I am your not so humble host, Jonathan Barnett. Here with you on a subdued sort of Monday is Aaron and I are here. And Aaron, how are you doing today?
That stunk. The whole weekend stunk.
It did.
Why are we doing a show today? I don't want to do a show.
It's cathartic. We just need to get this out. We need to deal with this. Everybody needs to deal with it. We need to address what we have and just move on. But it is
highlight. Well, a tie was the highlight. Anyways, get through the right. Administrative stuff. Yes.
Yeah. So Aaron's first off on a new microphone, so we're seeing how that's working. But either way, let us know how you think about it. The formalities of this are, of course, you're here on the Scani Johnny podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at ScaniJohnny1, just the number one, not written out, just the number one. You can follow me at JBarn54. Aaron, of course, where are you?
I am at Cheddar Talk.
He is.
And I actually put my own face on my Twitter account now.
You did, too. Right with your big creepy eyes. Yeah. And we can also reach us here at our Gmail address, just ScaniJohnny@gmail. And you can find this podcast. You've already found it, but you can tell everyone else who's looking that they can find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or they can find us on Google Play. We are now on Stitcher. We are now on Spotify. We are expanding the universe of Scani Johnny here. And this week, you just need us for that little bit of help to get through the week, I think, because this was not the weekend that we were hoping for. This was, I predicted worse for the Packers, I guess, last week. I think we both... Did you pick the win? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I thought you picked the loss as well.
I think mine was, I really want them to win. I think they can win, but they're not going to win. Which I guess I was right. It was a tie.
Yeah, if we were picking whether or not they were going to win, we would have been correct. But I guess I technically picked the Vikings to win, so I'm wrong.
Yeah,
and admittedly wrong.
That was a pretty soft pick, too, I don't think. Yeah, I got some positives later on to talk about, but yeah, no, I don't think either of us actually picked the Packers to win.
And I definitely picked Badgers over BYU, and I don't feel so bad about the Brewers stuff, and we'll start with the Brewers like we normally do. I mean, the Brewers had seven straight series victories. They beat, since last week, they finished the thing with the Cubs, they took 2 out of 3 with the Cubs. And then they went to Pittsburgh, though, I guess. And there's a home series with Pittsburgh, sorry. Won the first one 7-4, then lost 1-3, and then 2-3. And I'll tell you this, the pitching has actually been really good for the Brewers down the stretch. Like 4-2, 4-3. Like, here's what they've given up this month. They gave up 2 games against Washington, they gave up 5, then 4, 3 games against the Cubs, 3-1-6. Against the Giants, 2-3-3. Against the Cubs again, 2-3-1. Against the Pirates, they gave up 4-3-3 and lost 2 of those. And right now against Cincinnati, there's a shutout going on in an amazing game because Christian Yelich tonight going live, just hit a triple a little bit ago to get his second cycle of the year. He's at 31 home runs. He has 19 stolen bases, I believe, at this point. He has, I think it's 6 triples and 30 doubles. He's going to be basically a 20-20 guy if he can get one more steal. 31 home runs. He's having just a heck of a year. I think he's now tied with Aguilar for most home runs on the team, if I'm remembering this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
And John, so I looked into it, too, because we were talking about it during... production about actually multiple cycles in a career, and the most cycles by a single player is 3.
Yeah, and I think
that was by four players. That's it.
Okay, and I think they said there were only 3 players now, counting Yelich, who have hit for the cycle twice in the same season. So that's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He he's batting well over 300. He's doing everything wonderfully. He's got to be. I don't think he's the MVP at this point, but he's got to be somewhere in a conversation at least, which is great.
No, absolutely. He's top five in the National League, top 10 in all of baseball. I don't think anyone would not want him on their team at all. I mean, he's great.
And he's young.
Let's not mince words.
He's young, and they got to keep him. They got to find ways to keep him. This has been just the best trade probably in Brewers history. I guess I'm trying to think of something better than this. I mean, CC Sabathia was great for 1 year, really picked up the team for 1 year, and he was only the second half of that year because he came at the trade deadline and then left. And that was amazing for us. The trade for Greinke was a several-year trade, and he definitely helped out the team for a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just in my lifetime I'm trying to think of, but this trade, at least in the first year, if this holds up and he can continue to play and grow like he has, this has been an amazing trade. And like you said, they didn't really give up a ton for him, so this has been just wonderful. It's just great to watch him.
Just offer him 10 years, $180 million right now.
Yeah, what could go wrong? The Brewers have never had a problem with a young player getting a giant contract, hamstringing them forever. The ghost of Ryan Braun continues to show up at baseball games and sometimes bat.
He'd be fine if they just let him take HGH. If they just did that, he'd be great.
Yeah, because he's just always hurt. Always
hurt.
Yeah, one of the other interesting stats I saw on this Brewers team was Jesus Aguilar now has 62 RBI in two strike counts. And that's like fourth most all time.
That's insane. That's an insane stat. Wow.
He tied a Ken Griffey Jr. season, like the 97 season. So you're like, wait a second.
Did he hit his home run yesterday on a two pitch?
He hit the sacrifice fly on a two strike pitch that drove in a run. And that was his 62nd. 68 is the record, which is such a weird record. Of course, it's only been kept since 1988. But I was like, that's a weird thing to know. The person who holds that record since 1988 is Manny Ramirez. Manny B. Manny. With the 1999 season with the Indians.
Yeah.
Not any of his years with the Red Sox. So,
that's good company.
It was hurtful to have this Brewers series loss, losing Saturday and Sunday in home games, but it hurt more because everything else in Wisconsin fell apart this weekend in terms of sports, at least.
But and you're right. It was seven straight series wins. It was against the Pirates, who they've had problems with all year. For God's sakes, that's a team that they lost five games to in a row, five games, 5 days in a row, just before the All-Star break. Pittsburgh's not a bad team player by player. They were bucking up for a playoff run too and made some big trades that didn't go over so well, and their season fell apart from underneath them. Doesn't mean they still don't have good players. The pitcher they rolled out yesterday, he was in command all the way through. I was at the game. It was the most boring game to watch. I'm glad the Packer game was on the other monitors to watch, because the crew was shut down for the first five innings. It was a pretty boring game. It was a pitcher's duel, But those are okay when you're in the rows behind home plate, but when you're up in the cheap seats like me and my family, where you don't get to see a lot. But it was bound to happen eventually, too. Seven straight, they were hot. They were the hottest team in baseball for a while. And, and they got right back up there with the Cubs. But the Cubs, to their credit, too, keep winning as well. That's the reason why the Brewers would be on top of every other division, am I correct? Or in the National League, at least.
Yep. Yeah, the game tonight hasn't ended yet. They're 85-65, 20 games over 500, 2.5 back of the Cubs at this point. And, they've won 6 of their last 10. Considering they've lost 2 in a row coming into this, that's pretty great. That means there are 12 games left. If they go 500 in those 12 games, they'll end up being, they'll have 91 wins. 71 losses. That's a great year, and it's just the Cubs have been better.
Anytime you get past 90 wins, that's even as a success. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, so
I'll take it every time.
They got Cincinnati right now. Cincinnati is 18 games back of the wild card and 23.5 out of the division title. They're the only team with a losing record currently in the Central, because Pittsburgh is 74-74 now. So
right.
It's a tough division, too, that they've been playing in. They've been playing great. It's not like they play in the AL East where there are two teams and everyone else sucks. Actually, Tampa Bay has been better now. They are at 82 wins, so they're going to have a winning season. But, you know,
nobody. But I don't know.
Baltimore is 60 games back of the division and 47 out of the wild card.
With 12 games left in the season, can the Orioles get to 70 games below 500?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah, my Lord. Can you imagine that? They don't even have 20 wins on the road yet this year. They're 17-58 on the road.
There's an old adage in baseball that everybody wins 50 and everybody loses 50, and it's what you do in the other 62 that matters. Baltimore is pressing that adage. They do not have 50. They are 43-107. I mean, they've got... So they've played 150 games. They have 12 left. They have to win 7 of 12 to just win 50.
And we're talking like Cleveland Spiders epically bad. This is... I mean, the Royals are a terrible team in a terrible town with a terrible stadium.
Ooh,
and
hurtful.
They're 52-97. Actually, that's a lie. I like Kansas City and I like their stadium, but they are a terrible team right now. But I mean, they're 52-97. They're 9 games ahead of the Orioles in the standings as that goes, and because the Royals are in the Central, AL Central, which is arguably the worst division in all of baseball, they're actually only 31 games out.
Only. Just a little.
I don't think they're mathematically eliminated until about 2 weeks ago. That's how bad the AL Central is.
The AL Central has one team with a winning record. Jeez.
And that one team just has some really, really good pitchers, and that's about it.
And
they have arguably two of the best pitchers in baseball.
They've won 4 of their last 10. Anyhow, I think the Brewers are in good shape. We're still talking about a team that, I mean, they've got favorable stuff coming up. They've got this series against the Reds. They're going to win this first game. They're up 8-0 in the bottom of the 8th. That's the first of a 3-game series here with Cincinnati. Then they get to play 3 at Pittsburgh, 3 at St. Louis. They, of course, have this Thursday off and next Thursday off. And then they'll have 3 games to end the year. And the regular season here at Detroit, all at home. So the 28th, 29th, and 30th, they get to end with 3 straight with Detroit at home. And, yeah, they should be – I think they'll be locked in by then. I think they're going to do well here. I don't know how they're going to do on this road trip. St. Louis always seems to be just a bugaboo team. I would rather see the Dodgers than the Cardinals in the wild card game. I don't know about you, but that's my thought on it. I just think the Cardinals, for some reason, just – get in their heads.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the end of every good Brewer season. They beat them in 82 in the World Series.
Yeah, we couldn't even escape from them when we were in the American League. I can't stand them. But either way, I think the Brewers are going to pull us out, and I have so much faith in them that I think they're going to make the playoffs. I still don't think they're going to catch the Cubs, but I think they're going to get the first wild card at this point. And I don't think it's going to be a problem at all. I think they're going to pull away a little bit here. And so we'll move into the Badgers now. And Badgers do what they
do. We have to. don't put me through this, John. All right, sorry.
We're going to have to. And we were texting quite a lot during this game. The Badgers do what they do to us every year, that they are a top 10 team preseason. They play pretty well for a little bit, maybe not inspired, but all right. And then they start looking ahead at that Big Ten schedule. And I think they saw Iowa coming up after this, and they definitely gave us just an awful game. They played terribly. They couldn't get outside. They couldn't run inside. They didn't throw very well. They just didn't do anything. They weren't blocking particularly well. And BYU came at it like it was their championship game. And they just played. They played harder. They played the full game. They played completely ready to win this game. And the Badgers came at this like one more, and then we're done with this, and we can get on to what we wanted to get to. And I'm tired of the tweets saying, "Hey, they have everything they wanted right in front of them." No,
No, they don't.
This
No,
meant.
it's done. They can win out. They can win out. And I think we texted about this. I don't know where to. It almost felt like they were playing, and it was going to be okay. We'll catch up to them. We're going to score at the end. This will be the blip on the radar. We'll win 27-24, in favor of the Badgers, and nobody will look at this. This is a squeaker. It was like they were just playing to just barely get past, and they was uninspired. And this is the first game I've actually watched this year, because usually the first two Cupcake games I just listened to on Janesville's WCLO AM 1230, the big loud one. So I've just been listening to games, and so this is the first one I watched, and it was embarrassing. They got their butts kicked around that field, and there was no emotion to get going. And even when the BYU players were mocking them during jump around, I thought, okay, finally, this will get a spark. They'll do something. Nope, still didn't. So they let BYU come in, kick their butt on the field, and then mock them. And no, it's not in front of them now. They could win out. They could win. Let's say they do happen to get through the West, which is not going to be hard because everybody else in the West besides Minnesota lost this week too, I'm pretty sure, to lesser schools. I mean, I think our day is bad. How do you think Nebraska fans feel right now?
Yeah,
But
that's
anyways,
well, and my brother
if
is
they
a
went out
Nebraska
and
graduate, so
won the
he's feeling
conference game,
it. Yeah. It
if they manage to make it through and somehow get into the championship game and beat OSU, because that's who it's going to be, to win the Big Ten. They're still probably not going to make the championship game or championship playoffs because they'll go, yeah, but they lost to BYU.
Yeah, and
And BYU's 4-9.
what we've learned, well, BYU's probably not going to go 4-9. That was a nice team. That was, I mean, but
It is.
the Badgers are more talented and better, and they should have won that game. But what we have learned from this committee is that they will put in the third best team in the SEC over a champion every time if given the opportunity to do so. And that's why this is garbage. We lost it. You have to go undefeated in the Big Ten to win it all. You have to go
And
undefeated to get a shot at going into the playoff because they will kick out a Big Ten champion to put in the third best team because they did it last year and they find no irony in the third best team in the SEC being named the champion of the nation. The team that didn't win their division, let alone their conference, can win the national championship, but not be the best team in their own conference. That's beyond crazy. And it's why the regular season doesn't matter.
Bigger picture too. I actually gotten into a Twitter conversation with Armand from or Armin from the Drew Olsen show on the Big Ticket 920 in Milwaukee today, because he put out the Twitter, was this the worst weekend ever for the Big Ten? And I'm not a historian of the Big Ten. I can't speak to that necessarily, but bigger picture problem on the whole Big Ten thing right now is that as they go into conference season now, I don't know if you know this, John, but the Big Ten in general had a bad weekend.
Yeah.
Illinois lost to South Florida,
Ugh.
Purdue lost to Missouri, Northwestern lost to Akron, and then of course Nebraska lost to Troy at home in Nebraska, the second largest city in Nebraska. On game day, third largest, whatever it is. So, I mean, as they go in to beat up against each other, their strength of schedule is going to stink. Like, I mean, unless
Oh, come
BYU
on.
cracks the top 25, that loss is going to be devastating. I
Well,
mean,
Troy beat LSU last year, and everyone
did they?
still was talk. Yes, they did in LSU, and that didn't
Oh.
kill the SEC somehow. But that's because it's the SEC, and they have the SEC ESPN network. They have ESPN's logo
Yes, they
on
do.
the SEC network, and there's no bias, of course. But
Hey,
anyhow,
who owns the rights to the who owns the rights to the national championship game
that
and
ESPN
the
still,
playoffs?
yeah.
ESPN? Oh,
Yeah,
weird.
it's a TV show. They're not. Here's the problem. They always do this nonsense of we're looking for the best four teams. So, like, the problem is what you should be looking for is making sure you have the best one. This is a quest for a championship, not a quest for naming four teams who are good, and that's why it's garbage. You have to name the best one. Alabama was not the best one last year because they weren't the best in their own conference. And I don't care what else happened. The regular season told me they weren't the best in their conference, so they can't be the best one. And that's why, again, the regular season's a joke in the NCAA at this point, based on how they do the playoffs. UCF should have been in there over Alabama last year, and I don't think that that's even a hot take. I think that that's the most sensical thing that you could possibly say about that playoff. And I don't care that Alabama won it. They got two games that they won. They had a full season where they had a chance to win the SEC, and they didn't do it. So, that gripe. By the way, the Badgers, I'm going to say this, it's not the worst Badgers loss in my mind. We talked about this over the weekend. I still think the Cincinnati loss, although it was in Cincinnati, that was the 1999 team with Ron Dayne, they ended up finishing the season ranked number 4, won the Rose Bowl, went 10-2, and won the Rose Bowl. They were the Big Ten champs, and that team should have had a shot at a national title. And they didn't get it because they lost to Cincinnati because of stinking Shoegate and all that nonsense. And same thing, last preseason game before they got into regular season games, they lost to Michigan that year, and they beat everybody else, and rolled through the Rose Bowl and had Ron Dayne and Heisman Trophy, and they should have had a national title chance, and they probably could have won that one that year. So this is what they do. When you've got a team that they know they're going to be great, the difference is that Wisconsin knows how to chase. They know how to chase. They know how to start at 20 and get to 4. They don't know how to start at 4 and stay at 4. Because BYU, they're not used to a team playing Wisconsin like it's their championship. And BYU came in, and this was their championship, and you know it because you saw that celebration after that game. They weren't celebrating a game that they wanted to win so they can get to the next game. They were celebrating that game because it was the only game they cared about at this point and on their schedule. That made their whole season, winning this game.
Yeah.
There's nobody else on their schedule. They want to beat more than us, and I don't care about if they've got Utah on their calendar or Utah State. They don't care about that game as much as beating Wisconsin.
Right. And they're an independent school. They don't even have a conference anyways. They have their own network, remember?
Yep, yeah.
So, I mean, they could lose out and it'd still be a success of a season because they want the number 4 team on national television on college game day.
Yeah, even if they didn't.
That might be even the.
Even if they don't get the Beehive Boot, which is something they play for. So they'll still be doing that. So Badgers dropped to 18th, though, and I don't see them cracking the top 10 again this year. If they win out, I don't know, maybe, but I don't think it's going to happen because the voters definitely don't like a one-loss team that had a loss like this. And it's going to haunt them the rest of this year, and they'll go to a nice bowl. If they win the Big Ten, they'll go to the Rose Bowl, and nobody will care, and nobody will give them a chance. And, you know, they can still win the Big Ten, but this was not what the season was about. They spent the entire offseason tweeting every day about, you did this last year, it was a great year, it was a great year, no one cares. Who cares was like the hashtag for their offseason. And it turns out it was a real question. They weren't sure that they cared, and they were asking. And I was really hoping what they were saying is, no one, we're going to do better. But what they were saying was, man, who cares?
In the meantime, they reinforced the thought of all of us Badger fans that whenever they start the season ranked high, it's a bad thing.
Yeah. I think they'll beat Iowa, though.
They didn't do
it. I do think they're going to come back angry, and I think they're going to care about every Big Ten game way more than they cared about BYU, and I think they're going to play angry the rest of the way, and they're going to be able to be on the hunt again and trying to move back up, which is what they want to be. This is who they are, is a chasing team. So I think now they're hunting. So I think they'll play much better next week. I mean, they'll be down in Kinnick in the pink locker rooms, and I think they're going to come out, and I think they're going to play angry. So I think the Badgers come out next week, and I think they beat Iowa.
They better come out and win next week, otherwise our Badger segment of this podcast is going to be shrunk down to about 2 minutes.
I know. It's hurtful, and I'm a graduate of UW. My dad went there for grad school. My grandparents met at the law school at UW. And, most of my aunts and uncles spent either an undergrad or a graduate time there, if not both. And so, yeah, it's personal and it hurts. So we'll move on to some other personal hurts.
See, for me, I'm kind of a fair weather Badger fan because everyone knows that I'm from the UW trailer park of the North, better known as UW Superior.
Think you're so much better than everybody.
Most people don't even realize exists.
You have to call yourself superior.
We're at the top of the state.
Call yourself superior. You think you're so good. Yeah. UW lacrosse, and I live
the Yellow Jackets.
Used to live. We used to watch them because I lived right across the street from where the UW Stevens Point Pointers play hockey and football. And I used to go watch UW Superior come in. And I mean, this was late 80s, early 90s. The Pointers hockey was incredible. It was a national powerhouse. They won, I think, five in like 8 years, five national titles. They won three in a row. It was like 89, 90, and 91. So, yeah, I watched your school do the one thing it does.
No, come on. Well, they won a national championship while I was there, for starters, in hockey. But at the same time, they cut their football program in the early 90s because there wasn't enough kids to recruit. And for the next 20 years, they tried to get a football team back on the field. In the meantime, Ole Hogswood Stadium just has completely deteriorated away to the point that Superior High School doesn't even play there anymore. They built their own stadium. And the claim was UW Superior would never be able to recruit enough kids to play football. In the meantime, St. Scholastica, the private school up in Duluth, right next door to UMD, that powerhouse of Division II, somehow has put together a Division III team that's in the UMAC and is doing very well and has been for about 10 years now.
And UMD has a national title in football, right? Or at least they've had a ranked team in the last couple of years, I know. They had a D2 championship in football, too.
They had two of them in the 2000s.
Yeah, they had a couple national titles.
Yeah, I want to say it was like 6 in 06 and 08, and they're UMD is a good program. UMD is actually a sneaky good athletic school. They've got women's national hockey championships. They just won the men's national hockey championship last year, which is the second in 10 years. A couple of football, their basketball team's good, their women's basketball team's good. Yeah, sneaky good Division II / Division I hockey college sports school.
Well, and here's the thing where people talk about, like, Google SEC is big football country, but if you look down ticket, the MAC is way better than the Sun Belt. In division, well, in FCS, you and I and North Dakota State are just running that show. In D2, UMD has been killing it. And if you look at D3, it's Mount Union and UW Oshkosh has been good, UW Whitewater. UW Lacrosse has a history of great football, too. If you look anywhere other than SEC, the South doesn't play good football. They have one conference, and every other conference in the South is terrible. All right.
Right. I mean, Carson Wentz came out of North Dakota State polished and ready to be an NFL quarterback. I mean, North Dakota State. I don't even – what are they? They're not the Bison. But that's South Dakota State.
The Bison.
Bison.
Yes. Bison, then, not Bison.
And then North Dakota is just North Dakota. Bison. And North Dakota is just North Dakota because they lost the Fighting Sioux.
Something else now. I thought they were like the Fighting Wind or the Spirit or something like that. And then there's, yeah, whatever. We'll move on now because this is obviously what everyone came here to talk about is, you know, big time.
Hot North Dakota football talk.
Yeah, talking about South Dakota State and South Dakota, the Jackrabbits and the Coyotes. All those sorts of things.
That team over there in Grand Forks, they're awesome, eh?
Another news, Kimberly lost earlier this year.
And head up there this weekend.
Yeah, we'll start breaking down high school football in Wisconsin shortly.
What's the point? Kimberly's just going to beat everybody.
Kimberly lost this year after a like 70-game win streak where they hadn't lost in like 5 years. The Kimberly Papermakers. But, they'll probably still steamroll most of the rest of the way. But either way.
Unlike college football, you can lose a game and still win a state championship. Yes.
Yeah, because conferences and all that. Anyhow, moving on to our other painful moments here.
Moving on!
This one at least wasn't a loss, and we did predict this. I predicted it to be a loss, at least. And I'll own that I thought the Packers were going to lose this game. But they won this game. They did. And it's ridiculous that they're being told that it was a tie, because that flag was the most bogus flag I have seen since the Seattle game, where they stole an interception from the Packers and gave a win to the Seahawks. This game was over. It was over. That game, it ended. That was a clean hit.
Three times it was over. Three times.
Yeah. Well, that's the one. The big one.
I think Larry daggered it three times. He admitted to one premature dagger, and that was the ha ha Clinton Dix. interception return.
Yeah, Wayne Larrivee said it was premature on that one, but everybody thought it was over at that point. But the Jaire Alexander interception, which did happen, because it was a bad throw and everything, and he was hit. He was hit cleanly with his head up, shoulder hit him in the waist, hit him in the waist. He didn't land on him, and he, in fact, Clay Matthews put his hand out to brace himself to stop himself from landing with his full weight on him. He did everything. And the only thing that, Rob Domofsky is asking him, the referee, afterwards, like, was that part of the new rule? He's like, no, he lifted him up and drove him. It isn't the full body weight penalty. He lifted him up and drove him down. And we're like, no, nobody saw that. Vikings fan who is lying to themselves now saying he clearly did. No, what Anthony Barr did last year was that, and what Kendricks did earlier in that game was that, because he lifted his feet higher than his waist when he tackled him, which is what that is. And there was another Viking in the preseason who did it, and Vontaze Burfict will do it until he dies, because this is what Zimmer teaches his players to do, because he's a dirty coach playing to hurt people. But Clay Matthews fell straight down and braced himself to keep himself from landing on the quarterback. It was a perfect tackle. He didn't drive him down at all. He didn't lift him up at all. I don't even know what to say about it. The Packers won that game, and it was taken away, and there will be an apology letter, and I don't care about the apology letter. They cost the Packers a game. It was over. They had one timeout left.
The only redeeming fact of it is that a tie, it is not a loss in the standings. So in the end, if it comes down to them having similar records, because it's going to be the Vikings and the Packers at the end of the season for whoever gets the top. But, and that's the only redeeming fact of that. I saw something today, a really good tweet. It was that, so in 1999, the Packers are the reason the NFL had to bring back instant replay. In 20, when was the referee game? 2013? Fail Mary?
Oh, yeah. When it was the referees back, and yeah, whatever the year was.
But either way, it was in 1999, the Packers brought back instant replay. In 2000, whatever it was, the Packers forced the NFL to bring back referees. And now in 2018, the Packers are going to have to force the NFL to let players tackle again. Because that was a horse crap. It was a horse crap call. It was. And everyone knows it was. And the NFL could have done the cursory, we were wrong, sorry, messed this one up. But they didn't. They doubled down on it this time. And now NFL, if the defensive players of the NFL had any balls, they would all strike this week, because the NFL has put every defensive player in a position that what's right now. Because basically the NFL is saying you can't do that. Well, what is anyone supposed to do? If that's an illegal hit, there were harder hits on Aaron Rodgers in that game by the Vikings. I don't understand it. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. And on the other hand, though, too, and I'm glad that nobody's mad at Mason Crosby, because that would have been, what, his 14th or 15th field goal he kicked in that game at the end. It shouldn't have gotten to Mason Crosby having to kick a 52-yarder. And he made the first one before the timeout. And a 52-yarder is not a gimme. I don't care who you are, unless you're Adam Vinatieri in the snow, then you're going to make that 52-yarder every time. But otherwise, every other person is not going to make that. And last time I checked, the NFL is proving yet again that kicking is not an exact science. Two kickers fired today, including the Vikings kicker, which if there's any sweet justice in that tie, it's that the Vikings fans had to watch their kicker miss a game winner twice in overtime, including from 35 out, 35 down the middle. I was discussing this, and I almost took a football down to the local football field, Craig High School in Janesville here, out to their practice field, and was going to have Holly hold the ball and see if I could actually make a 35-yarder from straight on. Now, I know it's not the same scenario, but shank a 50-yarder, I get it. It's a 35-yarder. That's almost an extra point nowadays from straight on. So, yeah, he's gone after only his second game in the NFL. Dan Bailey is now the kicker for the Minnesota Vikings. And in my heart of hearts, because I hate Vikings fans so much, I only hope that Bailey misses a very important kick in a very important game later this year.
We can just all agree that field goals are not the Vikings thing. They spent a fifth-round pick on that guy. How great is that? This is where the Another proof that the Vikings don't understand how the draft works.
These are the same Vikings fans that were giving the Packers holy hell about drafting a punter and a long snapper. Well, last time I checked, our punter is
he's killing
the best punter in the league.
He's been great. He was amazing. He kicked it from down like 55, 60 yards to inside the 20 with no return. That's a crazy kick. Yeah, he's been phenomenal and just putting it in exactly right places. The one thing I'll say, though, you made the point about how this doesn't, a tie is better than whatever. At the end of the year, there's going to be one game left where we're going to have to play the Vikings, and the winner of that game will have the head-to-head tiebreaker because we don't split it now. The Packers should have won, and at worst, they could do a split the season series. We're going to have to go to Minnesota now in what is essentially a one-game head-to-head tiebreaker play. And that's why this really hurts us, because it should have been first tiebreaker head-to-head, at worst a split. And now we're going to have this one game count way more than it should, because the Packers lost a game because the referees blew this call. And you're right, the NFL actually came out today and said that that play was a perfect example of the lift and pull, even though he didn't lift his legs at all and had his arm around his waist. And they said the NFL will be using the Clay Matthews hit in their teaching video about what roughing the passer is. They did, just like you said, they have doubled down on this garbage call that nobody agrees has anything to do with the playbook, including all the retired referees who no longer have to keep their mouths shut. Blandino and them came out and said, this is exactly wrong. This isn't anything like what's in your playbook or your rule books. It is just ridiculous that they felt the need to not just say, they applied that wrong.
The CBA comes to an end this year, right? It's the CBA that comes to the end after this season, right?
I'd have to go back and double check it. I thought that went on
it's
for another
this
couple
year
years.
Or next, this year or next year, the CBA is running out pretty soon. I'm maybe thinking that maybe the NFL is coming up with some ridiculous garbage and throwing it out there. When they're renegotiating the CBA, they're going to have to get rid of that stuff and focus on that stuff instead of important things. Like,
end of the 2020 season.
Two years from now. So you line up, you make a bunch of garbage decisions like this that the players are going to have to negotiate against instead of and take the focus away from everything else, which the NFL is really good at taking the focus away from important things. They are. But
I got the greatest thing here, just looking up when it expires. Richard Sherman, the 49ers player representative, says he expects there to be another lockout when that deal expires. If he's still in the league by the end of that time.
I mean, I love Richard Sherman. I'm also a Richard Sherman apologist, but yes, you are correct.
We don't agree on him. I think he's a system guy. He's not playing in that system anymore. And he was already slow. He was playing in the fact that he had two great safeties behind him to save him. And he could just play underneath, and that was fine. And yeah, I don't think he's that great. I think he was good at what he did. I don't think he's an all-time player by any means. And I think he's a jerk. And everyone's like, oh, no, come on. I won't say he's a thug. I don't think he's anything like that. I think he's a jerk. And they're like, he went to Stanford.
He's and I was like, a jerk. I hated all the times that Seattle had to beat the Packers, especially in the NFC, because I like this style. I don't know. Maybe that's just Stanford grad.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's lots of people who went to Stanford who are jerks. That's exactly true. Because a lot of guys with money went to Stanford, too, and came out jerks or went in jerks. I mean, like, he's a jerk. He demeans other people. He doesn't just talk about himself. He demeans other people. And that's the part I don't like. I was like, I don't mind people, promoting themselves and puffing themselves up a bit. And you're like, fine, you're trying to make your money. You go make your money. He feels the need to go get at other people and demean other players in the game. And that I find, I was like, come on, you're just being a jerk. Whatever, man. Just
believe me, the apologizing for Richard Sherman was a lot harder about 4 years ago before all the Packers-Seattle showdowns and having to deal with him, actually in games. So moving along, catch this stat I heard today. The Vikings, in their last six trips to Lambeau, are 2-2-2.
That is interesting. I guess, I didn't know that.
How much garbage is that? You remember they in the first year that Aaron Rodgers broke his collarbone, and they won with the 8-7-1 record. That one tie was against the Vikings, and that was the one where Seneca Wallace and Tolzien and Matt Flynn, I think, all quarterbacked in that game. Matt Flynn almost led an overtime comeback.
Yep.
Yeah. It was like the last ride of Ryan Flynn, Matt Flynn. Who's Ryan Flynn? I don't know who Ryan Flynn is.
Yeah, no. It's.
I only named my fantasy football team after Matt Flynn for 5 years.
Several years, yeah.
I can't remember his name.
Yeah, no, it's. That's the thing is when Rodgers is hurt and not playing, then the Vikings can kind of hang with them. Like last year, they didn't blow out the Packers in either of those two losses. And basically, Rodgers didn't play in almost any of those games because he got hurt very early in that Vikings game at the beginning of the year and didn't play in the second one. And they won by what was it, 10 points or 14 points? And you just have to remind them, like, you don't think the Packers are two touchdowns better with Aaron Rodgers than they are with Brett Hundley starting? It's like, your team's not that much better than the talent on the Packers. We just have a backup quarterback in.
Hollywood, where am I tonight? Las Vegas would disagree with the Vikings fans, too, because Aaron Rodgers is the single biggest. They didn't put a line on the Packer-Vikings game until Saturday night, I think, Sunday morning.
There were some earlier than that. Because I know on Tony Kornheiser's show, they were definitely betting that, and it started at a 1 point Packers plus one. No, sorry, Packers minus one. By Friday, it was Packers minus one. By Sunday, it was Vikings minus two.
Right.
So, yeah.
We covered. He's the single biggest. Aaron Rodgers is the single biggest difference in lines makers in Las Vegas, and it's by like 11 or 12 points per game. It's ridiculous. The next closest is Tom Brady, and he's like 5 points. I don't have it in front of me because, you know me, I go on opinions and loose facts that I think are in my head. I don't actually use the computer that's sitting in front of me, but I believe I heard that on the Mike Heller show. Or on Dan Barrero, one of the two.
Either way, I'm very frustrated by this game, mostly because the Packers got robbed of a win, and it just frustrates me like crazy. I'll tell you this, though. Rodgers moved around better than I thought he would. He threw well. That's a great defense he went up against, and he threw a lot of points at him. And he got, 285 yards, I think, at the end of the game. He had a nice game for being fairly immobile at different points. And I thought Jamal Williams ran very well. Ty Montgomery came in there at spots, too, and ran very well. Receivers had some good plays. Davante Adams had three passes that he really should have caught that got away from him, and that really hurt. And he's been pretty sure-handed. He got another touchdown. He's been just a touchdown king in the league the last couple of years, but he really should have had a couple more in that game, and that hurt a couple drives.
I wonder how much those drops were, too. You got to remember Devontae was on the injury roster coming into the game. He was questionable
into
the game, right?
Only cleared right before the game because I have him on just about every fantasy team I have because everybody undervalues him. He's going to be a top five receiver in this league. And everyone's like, it's just Davante Adams. He's not there. And you're like, no, he's going to have a lot of touchdowns. And he's going to be the number one this year, the full season.
So, that touchdown he had down on the goal line yesterday was just like the one in the Bears game where he made two very good Vikings defensive backs completely whiff, or a defensive back and a linebacker completely whiff on him.
He sees the field so well, and he may not be the greatest straight line speed, but he's very sudden with his speed. He accelerates quickly. He makes very precise cuts. He's a great route runner, and he can make guys miss just in open space. So he's wonderful. I've loved watching him and Cobb. They got bottled up a little bit this week, but they're going to go up against the Washington football team here next week, a team that just lost to Indianapolis. And their big win was,
garbage,
hey, didn't they look good
fire
against Arizona? So they played Arizona.
Garbage, fire. Arizona the worst team in maybe a decade?
They're pretty bad. And there's that Sam Bradford again hanging out there and doing something.
Someone asked today, can there be a mercy rule put on place on Arizona where they have to trade Larry Fitzgerald to a contender?
We'd take him.
Guy's gonna go to the Hall of Fame. I'd take him. Why not? That way he can't beat us. But yes, Washington dumpster fire.
Yeah, they've been kind of bad, and I think Alex Smith is a good player. They just kind of let a couple people go over the last couple years that have hurt the team, and I don't know. They've never really built that defense over much of anything.
I talked to somebody who's from Washington D.C. this last week, and the feeling in Washington is just, well, that's where Kornheiser's from too, and it's just the Snyders have just run that organization into the ground. They didn't sell out their first game in 25 years yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. They only had like 60% attendance. Something like that.
That's horrible.
It's pretty terrible. The other thing is, if you want something entertaining, go look up what Washington is doing for their plan for their new stadium. It's amazing. There's a moat around it and little bridges that go over the moat. But they also, they're going to have it so you can do rock climbing up the side of it. And also, some of the drawings have that the moat is going to be kind of a wave pool, and people might ride surfboards around it. It's the greatest thing. Go look up the renderings. It'll make your day.
All I do know is that in the meantime, the Snyders have torn, they cut down hundreds of acres of old indigenous forest or something like that too, like just horrible things to the environment to make room for the stadium. We're not the Washington Redskins, and they still have their name. Come on. Jeez,
yeah, I'm not a favor of that either. It's just so strange that just keeps going on.
Mildly outdated.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, that's just. Yeah, it's such a strange setup. This does bring up one of my favorite points in watching the Big Ten over the years. There was a game, because Ryan Kerrigan is a pass rusher for the Washington. And there was a game when he played at Purdue. He and J.J. Watt were in the same draft class. And he was doing fairly well at Purdue. And he was a nice pass rusher. He was a defensive end there. I believe they played a 4-3. So he was playing D-end, and during the game, the Big Ten Network had this game, Badgers versus Purdue at Purdue, and at one point they were saying, like, wow, this J.J. Watt can kind of play. He's having a really good game. He's like a poor man's Ryan Kerrigan. And I was like, what? Like, he was clearly the better player even then, and I was just dumbfounded by that. It wasn't even a Purdue guy. It was the broadcaster from the Big Ten Network, and was like, what?
And I don't know what it is about the Watt kids either, but everybody's so surprised about how great TJ Watt is, and it's like, no, we all knew he was going to be good.
Yeah.
It's just the brother that was the fullback. That's the only one that wasn't but they're all good in the NFL.
And Derek is really good. And he's a fullback, so you don't notice it as much because there's not a lot of flash for it. He came to Wisconsin as a linebacker. And actually, TJ came to Wisconsin as a tight end, as did JJ, I believe. JJ was a tight end at Central Michigan, the Chippewas, I guess. And then he decided to walk on at Wisconsin to take a chance. But yeah.
And it worked out well for him.
Yeah, hey, and Derek was about to go to Northwestern until J.J. Watt ended up on the team. Then he decided to go to Wisconsin, too.
Fantastic. I like it. Yay, Waukesha. Hey, speaking of taking a chance, I'm going to go back a little bit here because...
Pewaukee, not Waukesha.
I'm going to go to Badger Hell for that one. taking chances. So I'm 17. Devontae Adams. Do you remember a couple of years ago how many people wanted him cut off the team?
Yeah, and I told them they were crazy at that time.
You told me I was crazy because that guy had stone hands. He dropped so many passes that one year. It was a sophomore season.
Second season, he had some injuries.
And him and Mason Crosby. Do you remember how close Mason Crosby was to being cut off the team? I don't know if he was ever that close, but it seemed like it was because he was shanking footballs left and right, and the Packers stuck with him. Those are two people that I'm really glad the Packers stuck with.
Right. And
they're both super productive. And
I got into some arguments on Facebook with Homer, Steve True from Homer and Thunder show. in Milwaukee, and we got some disagreements on that and email and on Facebook about this. He wanted him cut. He thought he was terrible. I'm like, I think you're just overplaying it. They've had a string of bad things. And one of the things that went badly for Crosby in that stretch, too, was that the Packers were the best red zone scoring team, and they were scoring from everything inside 30. So he wasn't getting 30 and 40-yard field goals. He was kicking way more 50-yarders than anyone else. And he was killing it from 30 and 40, but he did not have nearly as many, so it really killed his average. And, you know, then they stopped being as good at that. And here we are. But looking forward, I still think next week, Packers win. I don't care what the spread is. I think they'll be fine and they'll cover it, because I don't think Washington has that much of a defense. And I think the Packers are going to just kind of roll over them.
No, I believe you too, and I'm going to pick them, and it's going to be, I think, believe it or not, I think that injury to Aaron Rodgers woke up the beast. I think it really did. I don't know if they would have beaten the Bears if he had not gotten hurt. I really don't. I'm one of those truthers. Because I think that actually sprung the team into action. It kind of woke everybody up, and then this Vikings game, I mean, they put down 29 points on I don't care. The Vikings defense is good. There's no doubt about it. They still put 29 points on them in regulation. Made them look silly at times. I think Aaron Rodgers is mad, and I think everyone's mad with him, and I think Washington's in for a ride next weekend.
You see how well
the next three teams.
How well that offensive line held up last week, too, just shows you that everybody's with him on this one. So that, I think you're right.
Yeah, and his receivers are a lot better than people were giving him credit for. And the defense isn't bad. The defense is actually quite good. And the young cornerbacks that the Packers have been burning up all these draft picks on are looking good.
And they need to be on the field more than Devin Howe. Devin House needs to come off the field way more.
Except for that one Adam Thielen catch at the end in the end zone. Let's get away from that.
That was a fluke play. Just neither one of the guys, he was perfectly covered, and neither one of them turned to look for the ball. Just what? The safety should be tracking that ball the whole way. Bryce should have picked it. He just didn't.
You could tell by his body language, he was afraid he was going to smoke his buddy right in the head, because he kind of turned away from him last second and pulled his arms in. So either way, that was a fluke.
All right.
But anyhow.
We got to wrap this up, though, Aaron.
I'm going to predict it. 30-10. 30-10.
30-10. Holy cow. I was going to say 28-13, something like that. I think we're good either way. Brewers did win today. They're 21 games over .500. That seems like a good way to end this thing. 8-0 win over the Reds today.
28-13 different than 30-10. It's only 5 points.
Yeah, that's more rational.
You got the Packers 2 and gave the Redskins 3 more. That's the same thing.
Yep.
Sorry, go Brewers.
Yeah, so Brewers, 21 games over .500. That sounds great, and it's wonderful. And first game of the series with the Reds. But we're going to wrap this up now for this week. Make sure, again, that you follow us at ScottyJohnny1. You can also follow me at JBarn54. And Aaron is, of course, as you stated earlier, at Cheddar Talk. You can find us. Like I said, please go to wherever you find your podcast and recommend us to your friends. Share us on whatever modes you want to share, anything like that. You can find us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Please, when you do that, give us 5 stars and write us a little review if you could. It helps everyone else find the show. And if you have anything else, anything you want us to talk about, just write us at scottyjohnny@gmail.com. We'd love to have your topics. We'd love to have your questions, things you want to know. If you have weird Idaho Vandal football questions for us, or weird WIAC questions, or if you want to know how the Wisconsin Valley Football Association is doing this year, send it all over to us. We'll talk about any one of those things for some period of time. Give us the word here. And just remember, and thank you for listening, and remember that whether you're on the town or on the go, it's always on Wisconsin. It's ruining you.